We're doing Maaseh Shimshon. We're up to Chelek Yud. And the woman, the Timnit, has promised the Philistines that she would in fact reveal the answer to the riddle. She says, I will work on Samson and then I will discover the answer and reveal it to you. And we had seen how the Timnit, this woman, is searching, how do I do this? And she says, we'll review, Mi akum li ben kol mere'im eile, who will arise on my behalf amongst all these friends? We discussed that the word mere'im could mean friends, with the root being re'a, and the root can also be me'ri'a, he who inflicts harm. Mi achzik yadivi azreini, who will support me, who will hold my hand? Mi arov libo elai lageshet, who will sit in ambush over his heart to cause him to approach me? There's an important insight here. There's a saying that says, the man chases after the girl until she catches him. The man chases after the girl till she catches him. In other words, she is constantly trying to ensure that he's chasing after her. And this is something that's built into the psyche of men and women. Always. It's phenomenal, because very often a guy will date a girl and it goes great and then he's not interested. And the reason he's not interested is because she didn't play hard to get, if we'll use today's terminology. It's because she expressed an interest too quickly. So even though ordinarily we don't play games, but in dating I sometimes tell a girl, don't tell him you're so excited over him. Give him some time. Keep him wanting. Because us men, we like the chase. And if we feel like she's there to be had, that's it. You've conquered, so to speak. So then we're not as interested anymore. Yeah?
It's also in her court, she said, you didn't chase him until she's one of the size of it to be cool.
Right?
She's also
right?
In control, isn't she?
Also, so the wording that Ramchal put in Timnit's mouth is, who will ambush him to approach me? I want him, but I want him to approach me. I want him to chase after me, which is a recurring theme in relationships. A woman will tell her husband, do you want to take the night out? And the husband will say, gee, no thanks. So then she gets all frustrated. And he'll say, you asked me if I want to. And she says, he said, if you would have wanted to, I would have said, fine. You didn't say you wanted to. You asked if I wanted to. And the answer is no. Right? But what's she saying? She's saying, I want to hear you say that you do want to. You have to pursue. And if I have to come and tell you, gee, I want some time together, then a woman feels like she's degrading herself. I have to beg. So the guy says, I didn't say you should beg. Just tell me what you want.
Is that just built into
the psyche
of a woman? Huh? Is that just built into the psyche of a woman?
Right.
Oh, it's not like when I'm like spend time with you, I ask, or like that's a bad example. But like,
she wants to feel pursued, and you want to pursue. God created us that men have it within their nature to pursue. Women have it within their nature that they want to feel cherished and pursued. And so, even here, where the Timnit is interested in revealing what's within Shimshon, she still wants him to approach her. She says, "Mi arov libo elai lageshet, who will ambush him and cause him to approach me?" Yes.
This woman's doing it for prestige or for the money, for the power.
So she was threatened that if she doesn't reveal the secret, her father's house will be burnt down. She'll get killed, and her family will get killed. So she's in a corner. She's in a bind.
Can't she tell Samson that?
So that's one of her mistakes, that she's not going to tell Samson that. Mimisgirei levav ishi haniach divrei chidato asher bam nichlau, how will I take out from the encasing of my man's heart the riddle that's entwined, that's been enclosed in there? Hine libi tasov heima vafachad, my heart is surrounded with trepidation and fear. Uchiyam nigrash hashket lo yuchal sela, and like the sea that is forever turbulent, so too my heart cannot rest forever. Pen macholet esh beiti asimu, lest they make my house burn down in fire. And here we discuss the idea that the Timnit still views her father's house as her house. And we discussed that within a woman's psyche, there is a continuous element of connection and loyalty to her father's house. Husbands are often frustrated by this. They often say, you know, we're married, why can't she be more loyal to me? And in truth, over time, a woman becomes more loyal. But there remains within her that feeling she's still connected to her father's house. And this concept is actually articulated in the Torah, where the Torah describes a woman that gets divorced as going back to her father's house. This is the way the Torah describes it. And we see that the Torah views the woman as still connected to her father's house.
Good thing, right? It's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, even though it annoys men.
I have a question that's kind of related to the whole women's house. And
yes, sir.
When one of the Cohen's family members died and needs to go, and he goes to the funeral, how come he could only go to his sister's funeral if she is a virgin?
So the simple understanding is that that's exactly this concept. That so once she's married, so then she's already in someone else's house.
I'm saying if she were to divorce the person.
Ah, in that regard. So I guess you see from there that she doesn't come back completely. Offhand, I don't know a better answer. That's what it seems to indicate, but I'd have to look inside. I don't know offhand. Okay, so now the Timnit is contemplating what course of action to take, and we have a figure called Mirma, deceit. This woman comes swooping down, she's charging in, and she is going to represent the deceit, the capacity to be deceitful, and now she is personified, and the Timnit will have a conversation with her. So she hears the footsteps of deceit coming in. We'll quickly read the sentence she says to deceit and then analyze it. Ach kol tzadaki yikra v'shma. I hear footsteps coming near. Yidme lekol ragle abat ahavti. It sounds like the footsteps of the one I love. Mirma ra'ayati. My good friend, deceit. And this is a very interesting concept. Sometimes misapplied. There are multiple ways in which we can express ourselves. Men have a very direct way of expressing themselves, and women have, I would say, a more modest way of expressing themselves, but they're not as forthcoming in explaining what they want. Anyone that's had a relationship with a woman will know that that's the way it works. And very often men get very frustrated that... Why can't you just tell me what you want? And there is a certain beauty to the intricacy in women's thoughts, conversations, style. And there is also a very great capacity for deceit. Because, I'll give you an example. Imagine, you've probably seen this scene numerous times. A mother is yelling at her kids, or a wife is yelling at her husband, and someone knocks on the door, or someone calls. And suddenly her voice becomes so sweet, and this other person gets such a sweet response. Which is the real person? So she'll say, they're both real. I'm sweet to her, and I'm upset at him. Could a guy do that? He'd have a much harder time doing that.
Time to cool down, you mean, so
yeah.
She can just flip.
Yeah. Because there's a greater capacity to put on a facade. Women have a lot of gifts, and part of their gift to making things beautiful is this same idea, that they can analyze how it should be presented to others. It could be in beautifying themselves, it could be in beautifying the house, it could be in beautifying a gift. There's a greater level of focus and intricacy with their concepts, with their investment in perception. Men will invest less time in perception and more time in the thing itself, men will very often miss the point. Sometimes a guy will be very forceful because this is what's right, and he doesn't realize that the perception will very often define the response. Very often, if you can say the same thing but without being forceful, you will win. Let's take the example of a tenant and a landlord. So if a male tenant is renting an apartment and it's cold, so he might call the landlord and say, what's wrong with your apartment? The breeze comes in, it's as though you have no doors and no windows, you have to come down and fix it. If a woman is renting the apartment, so she might call and say, you know, I'm renting this your apartment and it's a very nice apartment. Things are pretty cold here at night. Maybe there's a way you can insulate the apartment better. Now, obviously, the response is going to be less antagonistic to the female approach. The female might actually use more force than the male. She might say things that will be more forceful, but present them in a way that sounds more gentle. And that's part of the skill that women have, and us men are sorely lacking. We know how to say what we mean, and mean what we say, and then bite the bullet, because we didn't think about how maybe we should have said it differently, we would have accomplished more. So this is a difference that's a recurring theme between men and women. It very often frustrates men, and at the same time, this skill can be misapplied. And this is a recurring theme in many plays, the idea that a woman can be deceitful towards her husband, towards her people. This is a recurring theme. What's interesting is that she is showing tremendous loyalty and faithfulness to her people or her family, and at the same time, she doesn't show that to Samson, which is, again, a recurring theme in many plays and in world history. Although over here, Ramchal is at least causing us to frown and wonder. Initially, Ramchal presented her as being in a bind. The poor woman has to choose between having her family killed and causing her husband to lose a little bit of money. She made the right choice, it would seem. And yet the question we all ask is, why didn't she speak to Samson about it? And is Ramchal blaming her for that? And then Ramchal comes and presents her as using deceit to accomplish what she'd like. Okay, so then which message is Ramchal giving us? So let's see the words he's using. Yes?
Do women know this about men? Do they cast a little bit of slack?
What, that we're so blunt?
Or do they look at it on the flip side? Yeah.
Do they realize that men, he's missing, he doesn't. No worries, he's just a man. Do they realize that we're inept in this particular profession? Or they?
Well, it's hard for them because very often a woman will say, I'm not your guy pal in the bar. Talk to me like a woman, which is another way of saying, why don't you say things more gently?
How much practice has a man had at Yeshiva Bocha talking to women? He's only talking to his mother and sister.
Okay. So now you heard it. Think about it.
And is there any element of love here? Or is it all infatuation on Shimshon's part in this woman? Is it all?
That's an excellent question. We'll have to analyze that as we continue. That's an excellent question. Let's wait and see. Okay, so deceit is described as kol tzeada. She hears the sound of footsteps. It's interesting that those words appear only once in all of Tanakh. Kol tzeada. And it appears by David, where David is actually fighting the Philistines, and God tells King David, when you think you should attack, you shouldn't. When the Philistines seem to be almost upon you, don't attack. You will wait until you hear the footsteps of my angels in the trees above, and then you will attack. Kol tzeada, you'll hear the sound of footsteps of my angels in the trees, then you will attack, you can go forth and attack the Philistines, because you know I am with you. So, I'm not sure what to make of this. Why did Ramchal take these two words that appear only there in the book of Shmuel, what they call Samuel B, the fifth chapter, verse 22, 23, 24. That's where you have the story. So, God tells him, you want to attack the Philistines? Come around the back. And then when you hear me, my angels, marching through the trees, then go attack because God is before you. So, I think that perhaps what Ramchal is alluding to is the means that the Timnis is using. God tells David, you're going to come around the back and attack them. That's seemingly being deceitful, which is legitimate at war. And your success is because I'm charging before you. And the perhaps part of what Ramchal is alluding to here is the idea that she's using tools that are improper. It says, Shimon and Levi answer Shechem and Hamor b'mirma, with deceit. And we say every day in Shemona Esrei, at the conclusion, Elokai nitzor leshoni meira, usfatai midaber mirma. Keep my tongue from speaking with deceit. So it seems that we view deceit as a tool that should not be used. It's something which is improper. A person should have olma. A person should have cunning. But a person should not have deceit.
Cunning
is the capacity to analyze and...
As in with Shechem and the two...
Over there it says mirma. It doesn't say orma. Orma is cunning. Mirma is deceit. So perhaps what Ramchal is doing here is he's showing us, yes, she's hearing footsteps, but it's not the footsteps that David heard. It's the footsteps of Mirma.
So Chumash though translated it as cunning.
Malasot. That's the nuances that you lose in the translation.
Does this Timnis have a name?
We discussed that previously. We don't know of her name.
Could be the fact that it's not from Gershema.
Perhaps, right, we went into it. The word Eshma, she says, as she approaches Eshma'a, I will hear. So those words appear twice in Tanakh. I don't know if we should take the time for this. Well, maybe it's just worth noting that again, the word Eshma'a is in reference to Hashem. I will hear Hashem. That's who it's talking about in Tehillim. Yidme lekol, it's similar to the sound of Raglei Habat Ahavti, the footsteps of the girl I love. So here, I want to go back to what was mentioned earlier. Anytime we see the word Ahava, love, in this play, we have to pause and ask ourselves, wait a second, this play should be all about love. What is Ramchal describing as something that's loved? And it's interesting that the word ahavti appears 18 times in Tanakh. The word ahavti, 18 times. And 8 of those 18 times is actually in Psalms in one chapter. The longest chapter in Tanakh, chapter 119. But chapter 119, where King David takes every letter of the alphabet and repeats it 8 times, has the word ahavti 8 times. Seemingly, just like every letter of the alphabet is repeated 8 times to give it stress, so too the word Ahavti in this psalm is repeated 8 times. And King David speaks about how he loves the Torah, he loves the mitzvos, he loves the way of Hashem. And perhaps Ramchal over here is alluding to the central question, if you, the Timnit, had to do this, I can understand if you did it weeping and dejectedly and remorseful that you have to do this. But he's describing as the Timnit is saying, this is the girl I love. He's taking the word Ahava that belongs to Samson. Ahava should be with her and Samson, and placing it between her and deceit.
Does Ahavti imply that they no longer love it? As in, I love?
I think it's that I have loved. It can be past, present.
I have loved.
The thing that I have loved, and it's not to the exclusion that I don't now, it's just that I have continuously loved. This is the ice cream I have loved my whole life.
Okay.
So she says, is that you, deceit? And deceit answers, Ani, it is I, which is humorous in its own right. How do you know that's true? If it's deceit, so then, yeah, okay. Are you the liar? Yes, I am. Okay, now what? You don't know, right? So the Timnit tells her, Mize hevi'echa choti ad heina? Who's brought you here, my sister? Atav yom tzali, now on this day where I'm in a bind, asher chamati otach ki tazri oti, I've desired you to come and help me. So that seems superfluous. What's she saying? Who's brought you? Mi ze hevi'ech. Who has brought you here? And here we'll see that Ramchal actually took a chapter in Tanakh and used words from that chapter in this conversation. So the term mi hevi'ech or mi hevi'acha is found in Judges. We have a man named Micha. Micha erects a house, a temple of worship for a pagan god in his home. And he takes a Levite to serve in that home. And then when the tribe of Dan, which is Samson's tribe, is searching out a place to expand their territory, they come in and they suddenly encounter this Levite there. And the Levite, who happens to be Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson, is acting as a priest for this pagan, for this temple of worship. This was in the time of the Judges. Okay. It's recorded at the end of the book of Judges. Our tradition is that the story took place in the very beginning of the time of Judges.
How come that's a Jewish name?
Micha? I guess because there were other pious people who had the name Micha, like the prophet Micha.
Oh, so that's not in the book. I thought that was in the book of Micha. Like,
no, it's in the book of Judges. So sometimes if someone is singularly wicked, so then if his name becomes like Al Capone, so then we wouldn't use the name Al Capone for a good Jewish boy. A Nimrod, right? It's a mistake. It's a mistake. Yeah, because people just read that it says Gibor, so they think, oh, it's a good thing. So.
Hey, but my cousin's Israeli.
Right, but people don't realize that Nimrod was wicked. So, the term mi hevi'acha is found over there, where the tribe of Dan asks this guy, who brought you here? Which is another way of saying, you, the grandson of Moshe, what are you doing being a pagan priest? And we're going to have to pick up here, Bezachim, next week. We're out of time.